Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the fire.
Good evening here from the UK. My name is Elliot Kay, and this is Strategic Breakthrough Radio Part 2. Because if you tuned into Part 1, we had some technical issues, so sorry about that. But hey, don't you just love technology? Because it can go wrong. And my name is Elliot Kay, and this is our 10th episode of Strategic Breakthrough Radio. And I'm excited. Should you want to know more about me, just go on to ElliotKay.com and check me out, and you can find out all about me. Because this is going to be a shorter than normal episode. I hear you say, I know. But we are going to smash out an incredible interview. Because my guest is all about sales. And she specializes in using games to increase your sales skills, therefore your bottom line. And also, she provides a portal where there's games, practical templates, top tips, and book reviews all around it. And she's passionate about unleashing the salesperson within. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have Sass Huntwood with us. Welcome, Sass. How are you? And thank you for bearing with us.
You're welcome, Elliot. Hello. Good to be here.
Hello, you're here. I can hear you. Yay, it's working.
Yay,
it's all working.
It's working.
Hallelujah. 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 Yes, it's all working. Good stuff. So thank you for bearing with us. And so just a little bit about you so people can get to know you and learn who you are.
Yeah, I, as you say, I'm in the first part, part one, I am addicted to sales, and I run a company that we specialize in using games around sales training and really getting someone, whether you're a small business owner up to a, you know, you work in sales, to embrace a salesperson within. I live in Berkshire in the UK. I'm married and I've got a 6-year-old daughter who goes back to school tomorrow. And I've got about 17 years. I know. Yes, I'm quite happy about that. I've got about 17 years of experience in sales in various different guises throughout my career, and set up this company, our company, 3 years ago, just coming up to the third year anniversary. And I'm a keen sportswoman, so you often find me on a tennis court nowadays.
It's tennis these days, not rugby.
No, I got too old for that. So, and I want to be able to walk when I'm older. So I took up more genteel sport of tennis.
Oh, I see. Excellent. And so tell me, sales, why do so many people, because you're talking about laying out the salesperson within, why do so many people not want to unleash the salesperson within? Why is that?
I think there's a multiple different reasons. I think you mentioned it in part one, sales. The word sales just puts fear into people's minds. Their mindset around sales is it, you know, if you say the word salesperson or salesman, it's, you know, double glazing, you know, PPI selling on the phone, cold calling, knocking on the doors type sales, or you've had a bad experience with a salesperson, or you've just, it's a fear. It's fear of the unknown often. You know, rejection. You know, why would you purposely put yourself out there to receive a no? It doesn't make sense. So I think there's a lot, multiple different ways in why sales can really strike fear into people's minds.
Right. Okay. And so, what does the salesperson within look like? If I was to unleash my salesperson within, what would they look like?
Oh, that could be interesting. I think there's lots of different. I think everybody has a salesperson within. I strongly believe that, and I think it's again finding what that person. And not everyone is the same. It's all about finding your natural style, your natural personality of sales. So my natural salesperson is not the same. Would be the same as yours or someone else's. So it's finding what works for you and works for you in your business, because obviously whether you're selling online, selling face to face, selling via the phone, selling purely by social media or email, can be very different. But it's about getting your personality out there, and there's lots of different you know, lots of different things. So, for example, one of the things would be being nosy, being curious about people. Great salespeople I've worked with are just very nosy. They want to know about people. They want to get to know people and get to know what makes them tick. And that's one of the personality traits you'd be looking for.
Curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But how much of it is, you know, genuine curiosity versus pretending to care to get the sale?
Good question. I think I'm a strong believer in integrity. Integrity is one of our core values in the company and one of mine. And being transparent, having integrity and being honest with a client or potential client. And that's very important to me. Now, I know there's a lot of salespeople out there would disagree with me and say, oh, no, you can fake it. But for me personally, that's a really core strand of what we do and how we approach our client base. And, you know, that's very, you know, as I say, it's vital for us to have that. And it is a genuine interest. And I think people can tell. Clients are not stupid. They can tell when you're faking it. They can tell when you're really putting on a front. People are much more savvy nowadays when it comes to sales.
I agree. Well, we'd hope they are. I still think there's a lot of people that are sold the dream and given nightmares and they buy it anyway. But because one of your cool thing is, isn't it? It's everyone's in sales. But what would you say to people who are like, no, I can't sell or I'm not into sales? Because it's true, everyone is in sales. So what would you say to those people?
I'd ask them, when was the last time they recommended a book to read or a film to go and watch or a YouTube video to watch or a restaurant to go to? And effectively, what you're doing is selling. Every time you look to persuade someone to either come to your point of view, you know, so debates going on at the moment, whether it was over last year over Brexit or, you know, whatever it is, when you're looking to get someone over to your point of view or you're recommending something, you're selling. You're selling on that behalf of that publisher or that author or the restaurant owner or chef or the film company, the film director. You just don't get paid for it. You're still selling.
Uh-huh.
And sales is, you know, the word sales, some people say, oh, it should be education or re-education, or I'm just telling people, I'm letting people know about what I do, which is pretty much what selling is.
Right.
That's what I'd say to them. And sales is the oldest, you know, you could argue one of the oldest professions in the world. We've been selling
besides prostitution.
Yeah, well, it's just a form of selling, you could say, just a different product or service. But it is.
Okay.
You know, we traded and bartered, didn't we? To the dawn of time. But then we introduced currency and it became much more, you know, more formalized.
Yeah. Or did it, you know? Have we really changed that much?
I think often our way we look at sales, in the olden days, you barter, you trade. And I know in some parts of the world, they still do that, still hold on to that. But when we introduced currency, and particularly based on gold standard, there was this almost shift of power or perception of power that because the customer has the budget, has the money, whether you're selling into a big corporate or an individual, they almost have the power. And we kind of almost potentially put them up on a pedestal or we fear them because they have the money. But it comes down to you have a solution to the problem that they have. If you don't, you don't have a business. You don't have anything to sell.
Absolutely.
That's how
okay.
I do it.
So, you know, selling is also going on dates and finding a partner. I guess you're selling your personality and why they should be with you for the rest of your life. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
So in essence, if someone goes on the pool, they're on sale.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that right?
Yes.
But that's a different show. We're not going to go through that today, right? So what's the essence of how do you get good sales? How do you get sales? Because this is what you train people, and you do it through games. But how do you get sales?
How do you get
sales? £1 million question. Yeah.
£1 million question. Gosh, yeah. How long have you got? How do you get sales? I think the first important thing, do you have a product or a service that someone wants to buy?
Mm-hmm.
It's all very well and good producing a product. I come across a lot of companies and organize, you know, individuals. Great product, great service. It's a real need for it. Great. But the second question is, will they pay for that? So it's all in good saying, I've got a niche in the market and there's a great product or service and I know there's a problem line and I can solve it. However, with a client, part with a hard-earned cash to buy it. That is the first question I'd always ask anyone. And the second one is, what does your client look like? Which is kind of errs on the side of marketing. But unless you kind of know who you're looking for, well, you're just splattering, you're taking a, you know, throwing spaghetti at a wall, hoping some of it's going to stick. So being very focused in who you're selling to, be very clear on who you're selling to.
But here's just hold that thought, because here's the thing. Yeah. I posted this today on Facebook on my personal wall, because too many people, and I don't know if you find this, they just believe that their product will sell. They just like, I believe in my product, I'm passionate about my product, you know, and I just know that someone will buy it. Well, how would you tackle people like that? Because that's a little bit of the entrepreneur's disease as well, is they're just so passionate about what they do, and they're so determined to prove people that it can work, that they might be barking up the wrong tree. So what would you say to that?
I think that, yeah, it's a good point, and areas I kind of look at that. Firstly is the market research, and doing your research into the market, into that area, into that products and service. Look at competitors, you know, who else is in that space. You don't have to break into brand new space. You don't have to be first to market in order to make a success. You can be 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, as long as you're doing something better and differently to the competition. So again, is there a need for that market? What is the market big? How big is the market? Who's going to buy it? Is that market growing or shrinking? All those kind of questions need to be asked, first of all. So that's all the research piece. And then the second part of it is, unfortunately, testing the market. Because often you can go to market with a product and service and you can have the best market research in the world. But until you actually test it, you don't know. You may be surprised. It may bomb or you may take off, but in a slightly different way than you thought it was going to. And I think flexibility as a salesperson is really key in that, is being able to be flexible, take the feedback and go, right, okay, we need to reconsider this, readdress this from a sales perspective.
Did you know, I don't know how true this is, I don't know if this is urban myth, but Viagra was originally designed for cholesterol. And it was given to both men and women. And when they realized it wasn't really working, the women gave it back, but the men didn't. So I don't know if that's myth. So talking about testing the market. So I need to check and verify that if that's a fact. But that's the story I've heard about Viagra. So all the men kept it because of obvious reasons. But testing the market, and I feel that not enough companies want to test the market. And I don't know, and this is maybe you can shed some light, if it's because they're afraid to find out that all the thousands of pounds they've invested in developing developing a product might bomb, or they, you know, why are so many companies resistant to the market research piece, even though it's so vital? Why would you say that is?
From my personal experience, I think you're right. I think there's a willingness, not an unwillingness, to address the data and the research that they've done. I think sometimes if you are personally emotionally involved in the product or service that you have created, whether you work for a large company or it's your own company, I think when you test, you have an emotion attached to that sale, and that sometimes can take that very personal. You know, that's a rejection for you. You're taking that rejection personally. And that's really hard to take. That's very hard to take. And I would say that's partly it. I think sometimes there's bullheadedness. We are going to go ahead, stubbornness. We're going to go ahead and do it. And no matter what the market says. And that's, you know, that's not great. You know, you've got to be able to have, you've got to have faith, obviously, and passion, belief in your product or service. I personally couldn't sell anything I didn't believe in or had faith in. I know some salespeople can, but I personally can't. And I think when you're in that position, you've got to have that flexibility. You've got to be able to say, no, actually, we need to adapt this. We need to change it. We need to look at perhaps we're selling it in the wrong market, the wrong people. Or we need to scrap it completely. Is our pricing right? All those kind of questions need to be asked.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how much I second that. But telling that to the small business owner versus, your big corporate, is a completely different approach, because the small business owner does not want to hear that something they've dedicated 12 months, 2 years, 3 years, that they might need to change the marketing. They don't want to hear that. And it's really detrimental to them, because either way, it's not going to work. You might as well hear it when you're at a market research stage versus launch
and hard. You're right, and it's hard to hear that feedback, and it's how you position it as, you know, working with people going, well, okay, what success have you had so far? Tell me, how many sales have you made? Look at your stats. How many clients, prospects have you had? How many calls have you had to make? How many meetings have you had? How many deals have you made? Now, that should tell you where you are to date. And going forward, again, a lot of this is comparison with the competition. You know, how are they doing? Are they restricting? Are they pulling back from the market? Why? Ask yourself, why are they coming away from the market? Why has no one else gone into this area? Why has no one else expanded into this area? It could be a lot of different reasons, but those questions have to be asked. And sometimes that self-analysis as an entrepreneur or a business person who's produced their own products or service is really hard. Because you're tackling something that's very personal to you.
Yeah.
And sales is very personal.
Absolutely. So what is your proposed path for people to get their sales goal? What are some of the things you teach? And I know you do it via game. So actually, let's rewind a little. Tell us about the game thing. I mean, what's that all about?
Well, many years ago, again in the past, because of my sporting background, I love games, naturally anyway.
Yep.
Highly competitive and love the way of games work. And so I took that love of sports and games, and then I was introduced to gaming, experiential gaming, via a guy Clinton Swain, who you know as well.
Uh-huh.
And loved that idea of not sitting in the way I've been trained for many years in sales, death by PowerPoint. A different way of doing this. So I took those two areas and my experience and love of sales and had a different training during my career, good and bad, and put them together. And how can we make sales training fun? And how can we make it so you're not sat at a desk just writing notes? That was the approach we took. So the games can be anything from like a 5-minute quick game exercise up to like 4 or 5 hours, depending on what's needed.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, how does that go down in the big corporates? Because they, of course, they like the PowerPoint. It's a bit different. And, you know, I suppose it's a testimony to your own sales ability to sell this concept, right?
It is. It is a very different way of doing it. And you will have some industries who are very traditional in the way they like to accept and receive training, and pushing them outside their comfort zone, you know, getting them to take the tie off in a situation is as much as you can push them sometimes. And others will embrace and they want props and costumes and music and louder the better and more energetic. So again, you have to know your market and understand. And through our experience, we now know which type of companies, the industry, what questions to ask, which industries tend to adopt it and be more open towards it. And again, it's you know, you're selling to different people, selling to like the head of L&D or HR or sales directors, as well as much as selling to the individual that's going to be attending. And then you've got different generations. So millennials is talked about a lot. They love the games.
Yeah.
Absolutely love the games. You know, they more the better. The way we do a lot of work with apprentices now, and they just love it. That's the way they learn.
Okay. Any particular industries that you can reveal prefer gaming over traditional ones? Is there a particular industry?
IT and telecoms will respond very well to games. You tend to find salespeople in IT and sales are highly competitive. Well, I think salespeople generally are, but they are very open. Things like digital media, those types of branding, creative companies, very open to gaming.
Okay.
They tend to be more going. Financial services, less open,
not
but
so
we're,
much.
We're, we're no, we have several clients in that industry, but they are definitely can be persuaded and can start have seen the results of and the impact of using games in training.
Ah, interesting. And any particular industry completely surprised you that they're open to it?
Logistics. Not a particularly... Listen, getting things
as in
trucked.
Delivery.
Delivery, getting things from A to B.
Yeah,
that surprised me. Some very wacky people live and work in logistics and sales. And they were very up for it. Yep.
Interesting, isn't that? I am surprised by that too, I've got to admit. So back to the original question before I asked you about gaming. So how do people get to where they want to go sales-wise? Well, what do they need in place? And I know you have some specific things that you need in place to get to your sales. What are they?
Okay, so I think to be a great successful salesperson, you've got to be flexible. You've got to mm-hmm. have a plan. You'll have
yep.
that strategy. Got to have a strategy. People put together business plans, but they very rarely look at a sales plan, sales strategy.
Ah, why again? Do you think that's due to their stuff around sales?
Potentially, yes. I think it's often sales is like a footnote in a business plan, and they put it in there, but it's not necessarily a separate plan. They don't go into the level of detail they probably need to. And really
okay.
understanding, you know, how are just systems and processes that you need to put in place around sales, but also the figures. You know, I talk a lot about understanding your figures. So understanding, you know, your pricing, your price points, but also, you know, how many calls are you going to need to make? How many people are you going to talk to? How many people are you going to network with? All those types of numbers are really critical.
Mm-hmm.
Again, look at the competitors. Look at what else is out there. What are they doing? What are they not doing? What are they doing well? That's you know, very important. And then understanding what resources do you need to put in place? What resources do you need to
right.
succeed? Do you need people? Do you need technology? Do you need content? You know, what is it? What is it that you're going to need resources-wise to really achieve what you want to do on sales, you know, sales goals. And I think as an individual, it's
mm-hmm.
all those things. It's about having perseverance, not giving up, not
okay.
taking that first no.
So let's see if I got this right. You need a sales plan, right?
Yes.
You need goals, insights
yep.
into your market,
yep.
and you need to know how good your product is. Do people want it? What are the competitors doing? And of course, now you talk a little bit about projection as well.
Mm.
Now, that can be a word that's, you know, like a mystical thing for a lot of companies. How would you suggest people go around creating projections? Because it can be a little bit of putting your finger in the wind, right? That's really what projections can be. So what's your advice around projections?
I agree. I think it's a question that I think that particularly sales directors up and down the country will struggle with. Forecasting or projecting your sales is a bit of an art and a bit of a science. The more experience you have of a market, the more experience you have of doing it, the better you become. You know
mm-hmm.
what's gone before. You know the ups and downs of markets. You know your product. You know the business. So it does come with experience, I think. And that
yep.
only comes with time. I think, yes, it is a bit of a finger in the air. I think it's also looking at what you've done before. I know several companies, they'll say, oh, this is what we did in the last 12 months, and then we'll just add 10%. That's one approach to it. Another approach is to, yes, what we've done before, the market's looking a little quiet at the moment, we'll just keep flat. We'll project
right.
that's what we're going to, a number of sales we're going to do. But I think it's about breaking down that bigger number. So if you're an individual sales person, your entrepreneur, business owner, and you're looking at a number, you say, I want to make this amount of revenue this year. This is my projection. Then it's breaking it back down into, okay, well, how many deals is that? And then
okay.
breaking it back down, how many deals is that? So how many opportunities do I need to get to those deals? So if you're targeting, say, you want to make 50K this year, you know you've got to bring in, say, I don't know, 10 deals, that means normally you're looking at a 3-to-1 ratio of opportunities to deals on average. So I need to have three lots of, now this is testing my maths, so 30-odd opportunities to close 10 deals. Goosey, I'm working backwards. So it's understanding that 30 opportunities, where do those 30 opportunities come from? Well, I'm going to have to speak to, I don't know, X number of people. I have to get so many people interested, decision makers interested. And that means I've got to make so many calls, or I've got to do this on social media or networking, whatever your channel is to the market. So again, working it back that way is often a really good way of projecting forward.
Okay, interesting. So we're coming to the last few minutes of our very short 10th episode. So let's recap slowly. So everyone's in sales. You've got to let and unleash that salesperson within. You've got to know your client. Right? You've got to know your client. You've got to know what your competitors are doing. You've got to understand what your clients want, how your product stroke service actually solves their problem. Just a very quick question. Is there a difference between solving a problem and having a luxury product in terms of selling?
No, not that I don't think so. I think there's still a problem there, whether it's a luxury.
Yeah.
Why are they buying that luxury? Why are they buying? What's motivating them to buy that luxury?
They just want to feel even greater than they felt.
Absolutely. It could be I'm showing off. I want to show the world that I've got to do this, or I can afford it. I've got disposable income to pay for this luxury item or service, or, you know, is it something they've always wanted from childhood? Or there's lots of different reasons why, and you are still solving a problem there.
Okay, cool, good answer. And the other thing we discussed is to have a comprehensive and detailed sales plan that has data, goals, insights, a 12-month projection, which has, as you said, different science and different areas to it, and of course keep yourself accountability. Now I want to know, we're coming to the last 3 minutes or so. So who are three people, it doesn't have to be sales, generally in life, who inspire you? Who are three names that we might know that you find inspiring?
That you may know. Very good point.
Out there. I don't have to personally know them.
You seem to know everybody, Elliot. I'm sure you do.
True. But that's not the point right now.
There you go. So current people, I would say at the moment, from a sports perspective, I love Andy Murray. Being a tennis player, I admire his work ethic. I follow on Instagram. He's amazing work ethic. He trains ridiculously hard and is totally so single focused. And I love that. I admire him for that. And he's definitely one that I admire and follow. From a business and fun perspective, it's got to be Sir Richard Branson, because he just has fun in everything he does. And that's one of our core values and one of my core values. I love having fun, and more fun the better. And it goes without saying, because of his success, everybody knows him. He's obviously extremely well known. And then someone I probably admire and from a personal perspective, and this sounds really horrendous, is my mum. That sounds really, really nice, doesn't it? But from a sales perspective, because she just could sell ice to Eskimos. She just has an amazing ability to be perseverance, not to take that first no. And I've learned a lot from her from sales, having that thick skin, keep going back. So that's probably my three.
Awesome. Great stuff, actually. I love that. Murray, Branson, and your mum. Awesome. And how do people find out about you, Sass? If they want to connect with you, they want to reach out, they want to follow you, what do they do?
Okay, so I'm on Twitter, Sass Huntwood. Very easy. There you go. You can follow me on Twitter. we also have a Facebook page, which is Sales Acceleration Strategies. You can find us on Facebook and sign up on there and follow us on different things, and you'll learn more about what we do, our online portal, and all the where I'm speaking next.
Fabulous. Okay, so thank you. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for joining us for our very quick fire round interview, episode 10. Thank you very much, Sass, for joining us. Would you come back in a few months and do a proper one?
I would love to.
That is awesome. So this is me, Elliot K. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm Elliot K. PTS, as Empowered to Succeed. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, all the same. And of course, check out my website, elliotk.com, and you can see what I'm all about there. Thank you for joining. This has all been around sales. It's been a fantastic quick fire episode, unfortunately, due to technical issues. We will be back in 2 weeks when I interview Des, who's going to talk about how to be a badass brand strategist. And it's a phenomenal interview. So check it out. Be ready for it. Till the next time, stay focused, stay hungry, and stay strategic. And we are out. Here we go. Till next time.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Napa Know How.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.